Welcome to the Sports Zone on WHRU LP 101.5 FM Huntley Community Radio. I'm Anthony Collada, and we've got another packed show for you guys with a wild week in the sport of football, both in the college side and in the NFL. We're covering Thanksgiving football. We've got Bears news, Bulls news, and a little bit of MLB news. So as we jump right into the show with our best moment in sports, and this one goes back to Dan Campbell back on Thursday of last week when he recognized the Ford Field Stadium staff for having worked the two games in 5 days, including Detroit's Thursday afternoon game on Thanksgiving. If you recall, last week the Browns, they got the 4 to 6 inches avalanche snow in Buffalo and were forced to play last Sunday in Detroit. So that's one of the things, and Dan Campbell quotes that it's something that gets lost in the shuffle. The fact that all the attention was paid to having these teams trying to figure out how they're going to get to Detroit, having the NFL trying to reschedule it and figure all those things out. The thing about having to play in a whole different stadium is you still need workers to get the field ready, because it's not like they played on the Lions field. They had the Bills, like, you know, their paint on the stadium as well. So it's people that had to get the field ready, to working in the concessions, to taking tickets, to selling tickets, all of these different things that a lot of people just don't realize that has to go into a game that is rescheduled and moved around. So a fantastic moment for Dan Campbell to recognize those people in his organization, because here, he's the head coach, and yeah, you know, there's the owner, the GM, but other than that, it's his team and his ownership of the team. And when you see it, when you see a head coach like that, that is clearly trying to build a culture in Detroit with how hard they play, you know, they're starting to build some talent on that roster, and then you see just how good of a person he is and the type of culture that they're building in Detroit, and it's just one of those feel-good moments, especially for a team like Detroit that hasn't had a whole lot of success over the last several decades. So a great moment there for Dan Campbell showing support and thanks to his Detroit staff for the two games in 5 days. And as we jump to the Chicago Bears game on Sunday, they had another very difficult loss to the New York Jets, falling 31-10. And coming into this game, I mean, Fields got hurt in the game last week. It wasn't expected that he was going to play throughout the week, and sure enough, he didn't play on Sunday. And then a couple of injuries on the defensive side of the ball that really played into the 31 points scored for the Jets. Rookies Jaquan Brisker, the fantastic safety, and Kyler Gordon, the rookie second-round cornerback. Both of those guys were also out on the defensive side of the ball, so you're missing your top three rookies. Well, Fields isn't a rookie, but you get what I'm saying. You're missing your top three young guys that they need to be out there getting these reps and trying to build for the future, and now they're all out. So with Fields out, you throw in Trevor Siemian. Well, you're about an hour and a half before pregame, and Trevor Siemian got hurt. He, like, you know, pulled an oblique or something in warmups. So leading up until game time, then the conversation was, okay, is it going to be Trevor Siemian, or is it going to be Nathan Peterman, who they called off of the practice squad? And if anyone is familiar with Nathan Peterman, he's the guy for the Bills that threw 5 interceptions in the first half. I think he has the most interceptions, like, per pass attempt in, like, NFL history, like the highest interception rate ever. And I'm just like, oh man, we're really going to have to not watch Fields, which is pain in itself, but now we're going to have to watch this guy. Well, I don't think anyone knew who the quarterback was until the second possession of the game, because the Bears kicked off to the Jets. So the Jets started on offense, and there was still no word of who was playing quarterback. So, and then they come out onto the field for offense, and it was, in fact, Trevor Siemian. So Siemian ended up staying in the game, playing the whole time. The numbers look a lot better and especially comparable to Fields than the game was. I mean, here, Siemian, he went 14 of 25, 179 yards passing. He threw a touchdown, also threw an interception. And especially throughout that first half, you could tell that there was a conversation that it's like, look at this offense with a quarterback like Simeon, who he's quicker. He's going to get the ball. He's going to get it out of his hands. He's going to check down to the running backs. He's going to get the ball out quick and move the ball. Whereas Fields, you know, he's going to hold the ball a little longer. He's going to look for the deep shots. He's going to run around a lot. Well, you started seeing in the first half the Simeon, he was that quick pass and all these things that he's known for, they were actually working. But as soon as, you know, second half adjustments, halftime adjustments, those things came into play, that was it for the offense. The offense didn't make any adjustments. The run game became very predictable. And in turn, Simeon was shut down. And you look at the idea that get the ball out fast, something that Fields isn't necessarily doing. Simeon was getting the ball out of his hands in about 2.5 seconds, which is almost a full second faster than Justin Fields. And he was still pressured on 11 of 28 dropbacks, so 39%. He was still pressured on 40% of the passes, and he was still getting the ball out a whole second quicker than Fields. So that argument, it's just not there in play. It's the offensive line just doesn't hold up. And then when you're very one-dimensional, being down 21 points, you're shut out in the second half, you've got to throw the ball. You're not running the ball. So now you become even more one-dimensional. And typically when you see teams that need to throw the ball, need to score a bunch of points because they're down huge, they actually have success in the fourth quarter because the defenses, they're playing prevent coverage. They're not trying to get turnovers or anything. They're just trying to keep points off the board. And the Bears still didn't put up points. It's just it wasn't a good showing for the offense, and it clearly proves my point that I made last week that Fields is just by far the best athlete on the field. And when you don't have him on the field, it clearly shows. And then you switch over to the defensive side, and I already mentioned the two rookies being out. And altogether, the defense made Mike White, the Jets quarterback, look like Peyton Manning. I mean, he was 22 of 28. He threw for 315 yards and 3 touchdowns. The Bears' defense was abysmal across the board. They can't stop the run. They can't cover receivers. And then you start to add insult to injury, and you got Eddie Jackson going down on a big touchdown play. He, you know, the receiver coming across the middle, Jackson would have been there to make the tackle, but the receiver catches it and he just takes off, and there's Eddie Jackson sitting on the ground. And it didn't look good. It's one of those injuries that, and you're starting to see this with the MetLife turf in New York, that a lot of these non-contact injuries, players' feet are getting stuck in the turf or they're twisting wrong or whatever it is, and they're facing some serious injuries. We've gotten ACLs, Achilles, another one to Eddie Jackson. We don't know what it is. They're saying right now it's a foot. It looked like a foot. He was holding his foot, but it didn't look good. We don't know what that's going to look like right now, but a non-contact injury, never something you want to mess with. And then on the offensive side of the ball, the Bears lost their number one receiver in Darnell Mooney this week, most likely, to an ankle injury that's going to keep him out for the rest of the season. So you got your two rookies on defense, your best defensive player in Eddie Jackson, your best receiver in Darnell Mooney, and your starting quarterback, all hurt. You know, those are five pieces that are supposed to be here next year and for the future. Now they're all out, and it doesn't look like they're going to be playing anytime soon. So, you know, now you've got questions. Do you even play Fields and other guys in the rest of the season? They've got 1 week against Green Bay next week, and then the bye week, and then four more games. So it'll be interesting to see how these players, how their health progresses, and if they even see the field. The one bright spot on this team continues to be Jack Sanborn. He racked up another 14 tackles this week, and since the Roquan Smith trade when he took over, he's racked up 45 tackles, 3 for a loss. So, I mean, he's flying around to the ball, but what does that really mean? You know, if he's flying around making all the tackles, it could be him, or it could just be the fact that there is no one else on the defense to make these plays. I think he is at least putting himself in a conversation that he is worth a look for a spot next year, but I don't think you can clearly say that he is 100% the guy at middle linebacker for the Bears anymore. So they've got another game next week against the Packers. Rodgers, and I'm going to get into this a little bit later, Rodgers left the game in the third quarter with a rib injury. He's got a broken thumb that he was talking about this week. So it'll be interesting to see if they play him or if it'll be Jordan Love. We might get a Jordan Love, Trevor Siemian game next week, and I just feel bad for all of America that's got to watch that. I'm leaving it at that. As we jump over to the Chicago Bulls, they actually had a successful week in their little mini week, three games this week. They beat Boston 121-107 at home, and then they went on the road and beat the Milwaukee Bucks 118-113. And then they had their trap game. I expected the loss, 123-119 in Oklahoma City. And it just, you felt this, you felt that loss to Oklahoma City coming. You get two huge wins against the Celtics and then on the road against the Bucks. You're on the road. You've had two great performances. You're bound to have a little bit of a letdown against a lesser team. And that's exactly what happened against Oklahoma City. They're a young, scrappy, talented team that, you know, they're starting to come around. The Bulls just beat the two good teams. It was bound to happen, but you take 2-3, and especially when you beat the Celtics and the Bucks. And now you've got a four-game road streak coming for the Bulls, and you see they play well against the good teams, and they kind of play down to their competition against worse teams. They've got Utah on Monday, who is actually atop the conference, having actually traded Mitchell in the offseason and Gobert. Then they've got some tougher teams. They're in Phoenix, then in Golden State, and in Sacramento, three teams. Obviously, Phoenix, Golden State are always going to be atop that Western Conference. And then Sacramento, another young, promising team with De'Aaron Fox. So four games on the road. They're not in any one city for two nights. Going to be tough for the Bulls. We're going to have to see how they respond to all the travel and the better teams that they play against. And as before we jump into the college football of this week, we take a quick station ID. You're listening to WHRU LP 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. In college football this week, the number one team, Georgia, in the country, they took care of business again with a 37-14 win over Texas Tech. They're most likely to keep the number one spot. The number two, Ohio State, played against number three, Michigan, on Saturday in a game that is expected to be one of the top games in the Big Ten, one of the top games of every season. And without Blake Corum, they're the best running back in college football right now, Michigan handled Ohio State 45-23. And this big matchup here because you've seen Ohio State now kind of struggle since Justin Fields has left against Michigan. But this has always been one of those big rivals. They've always gone back and forth. Now Michigan takes this. So now you expect Michigan to jump right up atop the Big Ten standings. You expect them to jump into the two seed, and now it all depends on how far Ohio State drops. You had the number four seed, TCU, who continues to win. They handled Iowa State 62-14. And then you got a couple more moving pieces here. Number five, LSU, lost to Texas A&M. And then number eight, Clemson, lost to South Carolina 31-30. So two teams there that are right here in this picture that are probably going to drop. And then you got wins out of number six, USC, over number 15, Notre Dame. That's a big win against the ranked opponent. And then number seven, Alabama, beat Auburn in an SEC game. So another big game that plays into the record for Alabama there. So going to have some moving pieces here in the college football playoffs as we head down towards the end of it. It'll be interesting to see how that all plays out and what these matchups are like heading into the playoffs, because keep in mind, it's only the four teams. One seed plays the four seed, two plays three, and then, you know, then it's the championship. So it'll be fun. We're getting down to it for the college football playoffs. And as we head over to the NFL and the Thanksgiving Day games this year, the Bills, you know, they struggled a little bit here and there with the Lions, but ultimately a Tyler Bass game-winning 45-yard field goal was the difference maker as the Bills take another win over the Lions. Lions get another draft pick. You know, they continue to improve that draft pick, but they're still a team that's going to fight. They're going to play hard, and that goes back to that point I made in the very beginning that this is a culture that, you know, you're starting to see some winning feelings going on in that Detroit locker room. So good things coming for the Lions, I think, and the Bills, They've struggled a little bit over the last couple weeks, but they're still going to be a team that, you know, you're going to have to watch come playoff time. The afternoon game, the Dallas Cowboys beat the New York Giants 28-20. Some questionable calls. There was a CeeDee Lamb touchdown that it looked like he was in bounds, and it got waved off. Apparently, the ruling is you can have your toes in bounds if you are heading out of bounds towards the sideline. But if you are going out of the back of the end zone, falling backwards, not only do your toes have to hit, but the heel of your feet also have to touch inbounds, apparently. So CeeDee Lamb's whole right foot came down in bounds, and then his left toe was all in bounds. And then the left heel came down out of bounds, and they ruled it incomplete. Lots of controversy there. It ended up just leading to a Cowboys field goal. And that was a big play at the point of the game. Ultimately, it didn't matter for the Cowboys' victory. Now, if you had Dallas in the spread at -7, you might be a little pissed. But Dallas got the win over the Giants. They snap a 3-game losing streak on Thanksgiving. And then the night game, Minnesota handled New England 33-26, and now Minnesota is just one win away and a Detroit loss from clinching the NFC North. Hasn't really been a competitive division with the Packers, Lions, and the Bears. So Vikings are expected to take the North in the next couple of weeks, and we'll see them in the playoffs. And then on Sunday, Trevor Lawrence went off this week in a comeback effort against the Baltimore Ravens, throwing for 321 yards and 3 touchdowns, including a last-second touchdown that would have tied the score at 27, excuse me, had Jacksonville kicked the extra point. But instead, you know, there's like no time left. I think there was like 15 seconds left. Jacksonville's down 27-26. They go for the two-point conversion instead. They don't want to play for overtime. They go for the win. They get it. In Baltimore, Justin Tucker attempted a 67-yard field goal, would have been an NFL record. I think he came up about 2 yards short. He's the best kicker in the NFL. You're obviously going to run him out in that situation. You have a better chance of him making a 67-yarder than a 55-yard Hail Mary out of Lamar Jackson. So ultimately, Baltimore came up just short on that last drive, just not enough time. But the story there, Trevor Lawrence going off and leading his team back. Cleveland pulled out a very back-and-forth win against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in overtime as well. And this was one that it was really looking like we were going to see another tie in the NFL. I'm talking with my brothers. I'm like, really? We're going to see another tie? It's the NFL. Like, it is the highest level of football, and we're going to tie. But Cleveland, they got the ball back with a little bit under 2 minutes left in overtime, and Nick Chubb ran it in with 24 seconds left to beat Tampa Bay in overtime. Tampa Bay continues to struggle, and now with Cleveland, you've got Deshaun Watson coming back after his lengthy suspension, after his massage mishaps, and we'll see. I expect a lot of rust out of him, but here, when you're as talented and as athletic as he is, it might not take a whole lot of time to get reacclimated. So now it's all a matter of if that locker room can buy in and accept him, because if that team does come together, they're pretty loaded from top to bottom on both offense and defense. So it'll be interesting to watch Cleveland the rest of the season. The Chargers, another come-from-behind, last-second, two-point conversion victory this week against Arizona, beating Arizona 25-24. Same situation. The Chargers, Austin Eckler, they scored a touchdown with 18 seconds left, and rather than play for the tie, they go for the win, and they get that two-point conversion to beat Arizona. And you're starting to see this in the NFL, the analytics, what are my percent chances if I do this as opposed to if I do this? Like, let's just use an example real quick. If I go for a two-point conversion, let's say I got a 50% chance of getting 2 yards here, or I've got a 95% chance to make the extra point, but now only a 30% chance to win in overtime. Depends on, it's all a preference, but you're starting to see these coaches now play into those percentages a little bit more, that it's like, hey, yeah, I might make the extra point, but I got a 50% chance from 2 yards or a 30% chance in overtime. They go 2-point convert. And here, those aren't exact percentages and whatnot. It all depends on the game. But just an example that, you know, that's kind of where they start leaning now, as opposed, let's go get a win now rather than play for a tie. I like the aggression. Josh Jacobs went crazy in another overtime game with the Raiders beating the Seahawks. He ran for 229 yards and 2 touchdowns, including the game-winning 86-yarder with about 11:40 left in the overtime period. That was a walk-off. And he also added 74 yards through the air. So almost 300 total yards for Josh Jacobs, and a guy that coming into the season, he wasn't expected to be the bell cow. There was a lot of conversations that he was going to be phased out of the offense. And if you recall way back when, I mentioned that he was playing in week one of the preseason, which is something you never see your starters doing. But what looked kind of like a grim season coming in, he has turned into one of a few bright spots on that whole Raiders offense. So good for Josh Jacobs and a huge 86-yard walk-off overtime run. And then I mentioned a little bit earlier, talking about the Bears having to face the Packers, Aaron Rodgers left the game in the third quarter with a rib injury, and he was replaced by former first-round pick Jordan Love, who he came into the game and immediately hit fellow rookie Christian Watson for a long touchdown. So, yeah, it's garbage time, but it's one of those things that Packers fans are probably rubbing their hands together a little bit for. I don't think you can look one way or the other right now on Jordan Love. I don't think he's seen enough consistent regular season snaps to say, yes, he's him, or no, he's not. And then, because here, we've only ever seen Jordan Love in mop-up time. Most quarterbacks, again, alluding to the point I made back with the Bears, most quarterbacks rack up garbage yards, rack up garbage points towards the end of the game when you're getting blown out. So that's what you were seeing with Love. They were able to get the score within 7 as Green Bay lost 40-33. But, you know, it's not like he led a huge comeback. It's not like he really made it close. So it's one of those things that we still have to see consistent reps out of Jordan Love, but you know, he comes in, he shows flashes here and there, and for a franchise like the Packers, who have essentially seen Hall of Fame quarterbacks for the last 40 years in Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, I can only imagine how much they are really hoping and praying for Jordan Love to amount to something, because Aaron Rodgers, he's not having a good season. He looks almost checked out of Green Bay. He almost didn't want to come back this year. So his future is super up in the air, and if you can start to get some production out of Jordan Love, who knows? Your string of luck at the quarterback position just might continue, Green Bay. But as a Chicago Bears fan, I hope it's over. couple MLB transactions as the offseason starting to kick off and we're starting to see some signings. Couple minor ones right now. Mike Clevinger, starting pitcher who used to throw for the Padres, he is signing with the Chicago White Sox. So the White Sox are adding to that rotation that was very successful last year with Kopech and Cease and Giolito. And then another move that ties in with the White Sox is their former first baseman Jose Abreu, who was never expected to come back to the White Sox. It was announced on Monday that he signed a 3-year contract with the World Series champions, Houston Astros. So Houston, they continue to bolster that lineup, and you know they look to try to repeat as champions once again. And as we wrap up our show with our fun fact of the week, we take a look at the Kansas City Chiefs and their star tight end, Travis Kelce, who, with 57 yards on Sunday, he is now up to 9,918 career receiving yards, and that has officially passed Hall of Fame tight end Tony Gonzalez, who had 9,882 for the most receiving yards in a career for a tight end in their first 11 seasons. Now, that in and of itself is a fantastic accomplishment to have beaten out a Hall of Famer. He's still clearly the number one tight end in the league, and he doesn't have any signs of showing down. But now, let me throw you this little nugget. All of Kelce's rookie year, he didn't even play. Kelce did not play a single snap his rookie year. So he's in his 11th season right now, but he's only technically played 10, and he's beaten this Hall of Fame tight end. So it's kind of weird that you see, you know, these conversations. Who's the greatest of all time at X position? And you bring up the tight end, and yeah, Tony Gonzalez, you got Rob Gronkowski, Dallas Clark, you got a couple of these guys. And Travis Kelce's name is just never thrown into that conversation. And I mean, here, he scores every game. He's got more yards now than any other tight end in the NFL. How do you not put him in that conversation? So Travis Kelce, best tight end in the league, and the Chiefs definitely got a good one there. So with that, we wrap up our show. A busy week here. Lots of action going on in football. I believe we are back for one more week next week before we take our Christmas break. So be sure to tune back in next week with updated college football rankings, more NFL news, and still keeping up with the Bears. So until next week. We'll be right back.